This is the Eurosnob Podcast.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of the Eurosnob Podcast. My name is Ian Smith, and we've got a special episode here for you, joined by a special guest today. His name is John Townsend. He writes for These Football Times, I believe I have that right. And if you're in tune at all with any of the U.S. soccer Twitter scene, you've certainly seen him putting some wisdom out there and educating all the media types out there. John, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I can't complain, man. Can't complain. Glad to have you on. I know we've kind of talked a little bit back and forth trying to get you in, and you know, we were about to have you on the show, and then we got this gift of all the news about Jurgen Klinsmann, and within a couple of days later, the Bruce Arena hiring. So we'll just dive right in. What were your initial thoughts when Klinsmann got let go?
You know, I think on a realistic level, I think it was pretty inevitable. I guess I knew it was inevitable. The media, much of the fan base, some of the former players on the national team pool, MLS, it's media, even MLS coaches. So many of them rooted for Klinsmann's failure. It just seemed that way. I think the firing was probably the right move, and I'll elaborate on that in a little bit. But I don't think any one person can really fix U.S. soccer and the national team programs from the standpoint that Jurgen Klinsmann attempted. And he even promised to do that. And, you know, for people who don't know this, he tried doing this dating back to the Bob Bradley years. He was kind of in Sunil Gulati's ear back then when he was a pundit and he was, you know, kind of rumored to be taking over. And then he didn't. And then Bob Bradley got it through the next World Cup. And then Klinsmann got it about 5 years ago. So the reality as I see it is Klinsmann made a lot of assumptions about our system. And his pedigree as a player, his experience, his success, relative success as the German national team coach with Yogi Löw and that player pool specifically, you know, he helped develop a lot of good things. And I don't know if you've read Das Reboot or if anyone's read Das Reboot by Ralf Honigstein. It's a fantastic book, kind of really details what Klinsmann did and a lot of other people in Germany. But what happened here, I think a lot of that masked his shortcomings as a coach. And the U.S. job, much like the Bayern Munich job, I think, you know, I thought about this a lot. It exposed his flaws as a coach. And I think it would do that to anybody. It would do that to the best coaches in the world today. The thing is the system here is so fractured. And if you follow me on Twitter, you know I'm a big proponent of, you know, open systems and fixing these things. And but I think what happened is it's so fractured, so messy, you know, so massively off the global pace and standard that all Klinsmann could really do is identify the problem from an outside perspective and then make them talking points, which is a good thing. I think these are minor victories. But overall, the progress he wanted to make or he promised, I think that's still probably at least a decade away, even more maybe. And maybe we'll see in a couple of years if he planted some seeds that we can harvest later on. But ultimately, I never thought Klinsmann was the answer, and I don't think anybody really should have. And I think my biggest thing was when, you know, you have a relative outsider who came in, he's won a World Cup as a player, more accomplished than any player we've ever produced. He had a vision that was based on Germany's revitalization. And then, you know, what happened was he got this dual role, technical director and then head coach. I don't think any one person should ever have that much power or should ever be tasked with that because we know that our system is so much of a mess. So I really think that my initial thoughts were, well, if he's going, I think Sunil Gulati has got to be accountable as well, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that's – for me, that's kind of the biggest issue. I think coming in Klinsmann – you know, you kind of touched on it there. It's almost like he bit off more than he could chew. I don't think he realized the extent of the damage that our system had already incurred and how much work really would need to go into fixing it. I really liked when he first got hired, a lot of the stuff that he said, a lot of the plans that he came out and said he wanted to execute, they sounded like they made sense. And I think, man, I want to say shortly after the World Cup, you kind of started seeing, you know, coming out of the World Cup, he talked about wanting to transition to the next group of players, and those players just weren't ready. You know, and that's the thing about the national team manager is that a lot of times that person gets blamed for the lack of development of younger players. And you saw a lot about, you know, you saw a lot of talk with that where, you know, he would get criticized for still calling in the same old players. And that was by both the MLS-sided media and the other side, where it's like, okay, you know, why is he still calling in the same? Why is Chris Wondolowski and Jermaine Jones, why do they keep getting called in over and over again? And to me, that was because the next group of players really wasn't ready. And for him to accomplish what he wanted to accomplish, he needed that group of players that right now would be between the ages of, you know, really Michael Bradley's group is what he needed to be at a higher level for him to take his plans to the next step. So, you know, like you said, it was inevitable. I wasn't shocked. I was a little surprised that it, you know, I'm surprised that I wasn't. I thought that he was going to get let go right after the qualifying games. And it was interesting because they gave him a couple extra days. He did a Facebook Q&A, which to me, if I'm going to fire somebody, I'm not going to let him go up and sit there and answer questions about the future of U.S. soccer. So the whole thing seemed really poorly handled to me. But, you know, that was really the only surprise. It was kind of something that you saw coming. He started to get some of his comments in the media started to get a little bit obscure and out there too, which is usually a sign to me that somebody's running out of answers.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I know you're right on that. And I think what we saw and what we will continue to see is this media element. I could not for the life of me, and I know that this is a big issue, especially if you're in the social media circles on American soccer, is the media expected Jurgen Klinsmann to develop these players, which it's not the national team coach's job to develop polished players. His job is to select the best group available to him at a given time. And I think it exposed the fractures that I talked about before, the bad youth development, the some of the things that I think we can get into. But, you know, when I saw media members or people who really wanted him out saying, you know, the bad touch, good job, Jurgen. I'm like, well, it's not really his job. Yes, he's accountable because he put him on the field. But if he's picking from a group that as a whole probably isn't as good as they need to be. And I think, you know, I keep thinking in my head, if Klinsmann comes 10 years down the road, so we get him, you know, 10 years from now when maybe some of these elements are in place or a Klinsmann-like person, maybe we have a better go-around. But I think there's a lot of assumptions made that our own fan bases and our own media, you know, aside from the purists that, you know, in our little circles, that, I mean, I just couldn't for life me understand why a media member or anybody in the fan base would blame a national team coach for not producing a player, because that's really not his job. His job is to select and compete. And, you know, if you look at his winning, you know, his record, he actually had a better record than Arena and Bradley. So I don't think that we can really look at his record and say, oh, this is a bad experiment. He was successful. What I think his death knell was is he went to battle with the media and Major League Soccer, the commissioner, the fan base. And it really, you know, he did talk down to the American system, and I talked down to the American system. I'm a product of it. So, I mean, I really think that our soccer culture isn't yet ready for someone from the outside to call a spade a spade. And I'm not letting Klinsmann off the hook. He did make some really bad decisions and some, you know, bad media takes. But there are some elements that I think, you know, I hold the players accountable too. And no one is talking about how poor Jozy Altidore has been, how Michael Bradley's form went down when he came from Roma to, you know, MLS. You know, no one's really highlighting these things. And so, again, you know, it takes a couple elements to really tell the whole story, and I don't think American soccer and culture and media have really done a good job with that.
And I think you kind of hit it right on there when you said that he decided to take on the media. So much of U.S. soccer media is MLS backing, if you're, you know, the quote, I think it was Alexi Lalas that said it, if you're not a fan of MLS, you can't call yourself an American soccer fan, or something along those lines. I don't remember the exact quote.
No, you're right. No, that's the quote. That's the quote.
And it's to me, it's amazing just how it's almost like the media has blinders on to what the real issue is. We have this. What's the word I'm looking for? It's escaping me right now.
They kind of cheerlead more than report, I think, in so many ways. I mean, I think what I see is they would rather pump a narrative and almost act as propagandists. And I don't want to go down this road, but sometimes it's, you know, the player pool isn't as good as advertised, and they compare things to 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And it's like, well, you think the rest of the world stayed still? Like, I mean, and I really believe that our media, they need to understand that criticism does not mean an attack. It's simply a criticism. And Jurgen was good at that. He did that before. That probably was what got him the job, was he was saying things that people weren't ready for, and it was provocative and it made sense. And then when you looked at, well, the work it would take to overhaul a lot of what he was talking about, I think people were like, okay, wait, we didn't sign up for this. And there's an element of American sporting culture that's really, they panic. They want to win now. They want the results. They don't really care about the process. They just want, you know, they want to be there yesterday, so to speak. And I think we saw that a lot.
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, pretty much everything that our media does, we get so defensive. You know, we need to accept, you know, the majority, I think, of American soccer fans, U.S. soccer fans, accept the fact that we're not on the same level as a lot of the majority of the world. I don't want to say the majority of the world, but you know what I mean? The top countries in the world, we're not on their level. We know that. So when Klinsmann comes out and says that to me, I say, oh, hey, yeah, that makes sense. But the media just goes into this immediate frenzy of, you know, just trying to defend U.S. soccer at all costs. And I think that kind of, you know, he makes points about U.S. fans not being super educated or not being educated enough on the game and the rest of the world. And to a certain extent, that's true. I mean, when it comes to seeing, informing in your own opinion on what U.S. soccer has to do to get to the level that we want to be at, the majority of fans get their opinions based on what the media says. So he kind of didn't do himself any favors in that way. So, and I think that made it difficult for people to see the progress that really was made. And I'm not sure if you agree with me on that, but I think that there is a good groundwork that he laid in terms of bringing in a new type of player, encouraging a new type of development that I don't really, you know, we're starting to see it with Pulisic, but I think you're going to see that effect maybe 5 years down the road going into the 2022 World Cup, when you're really going to start to see the effect that he had on the development.
Right. You know, I think the biggest thing we can credit for Klinsmann is he identified some major issues in American soccer and made them talking points, made it arguments, made them discussions and debates. And that's healthy. I think he also called out our mentality as a sporting country, a soccer country, which is, you know, we need to be competing with Champions League caliber players to have a good national team. Yes, MLS is not the worst league in the world, but it's certainly far from the best. And the standard, the style of play, the speed of play, all the tactical stuff, it's really not up to the standard of even Liga MX. And it's really not up to the standard of when you go to a World Cup and you get out of the group phase, you're expecting to play against teams that are probably based in South America or Europe who have players that are loaded on Champions League caliber rosters. And, you know, Klinsmann attack the mentality of our players are playing it safe. He cut from the World Cup squad, and nobody thought he had the stones to do that. And he did it and defended it. And, you know, was he right? Was he wrong? Doesn't matter. He was in charge. And I think at the end of the day, I think you're right. We're going to see a generation of players that I think have the elements that he wanted to put in place come to bear its fruits in, you know, 5 to 10 years. And I think ultimately, we can chalk that off as a success for Klinsmann, or the Klinsmann era, not just him, but getting the Development Academy to go to 12, 13 instead of just 15, 16, 17, 18, having other tiers in there, having, you know, maybe calling out some coaching education points, maybe even, you know, calling MLS what it is, which is, you know, doesn't matter if you're a fan of it or not. It's a mediocre league when it comes to the world standard. You know, there's nothing about that statement that's untrue. It's just when it comes down to what he demanded from his players, he had starters from his national team coming back from the Premier League, from Serie A, from other leagues in Europe, playing in MLS, signing designated player contracts. As soon as they did that, I feel as a fan, nothing about MLS, that their performance on the national team level dipped. And it showed in the results. I mean, it showed in the Gold Cup. It showed in, you know, a lot. And maybe that's part of Klinsmann selecting the wrong players, but I think a lot of it, too, is he warned them, they came back, and then performances, you know, dipped. So I think, you know, he brought in another element, which I think we should talk about, is the dual nationals. He brought in this idea that, you know, I was disappointed he didn't bring in more dual nationals from the Latino side, but he tapped into his resources in Germany, you know, found some interesting players. I think we'll see if they pan out years down the road, if that's going to continue, but I don't think it will. But I think that there was some interesting, you know, selections, and I think that there's some of them were the right selections, some of them were completely wrong. But again, it's another avenue that we hadn't seen at the scale before Klinsmann.
I completely agree with you there. And, you know, one of the things that going back to, you know, you're talking about he had players coming back from the Premier League, from Serie A. Somebody like Michael Bradley, the last time his development was moving forward and he was, you know, putting in better performances was when he was still in Italy. The second he came back here, he plateaued and has gotten worse, in my opinion. And, you know, you said part of it is that he kept getting selected. Well, who else was he going to call in to play in center midfield? I mean, is there, you know, those options aren't there. So I think the fact that he started to open up those avenues of bringing in more players, and I don't understand why there's even any controversy around that at all, but he, if anything, brought into our player pool, so it has the opportunity to pull in some of these better players that, you know, if you do have a player that gets complacent in his form slumps, doesn't matter who you are, we've got somebody that can come in and challenge you for your spot.
Right. And I think the one thing I would fault Klinsmann for was not for selecting players over and over again after bad performances. So maybe he should have benched Michael Bradley or Josie Altidore more. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, these are coaching errors. These are selection errors. This is, you know, he's coming from an angle where this is not Germany. You know, you're not going to bring off one guy and bring on another who's a Champions League winner. And I think he probably built himself and his beliefs up way too much. And we, you know, as not us, but the American soccer culture kind of held him accountable. And I think, you know, If we could temper our expectations, if we could trust the process, and it doesn't have to be Klinsmann, it could be anybody, it could be Conte, it could be Jurgen Klopp, it could be you know, Mourinho, Guardiola, anyone who come in, they would have struggles with our system, in my opinion.
Yeah, I certainly can't disagree with you. So kind of moving forward, what do you think that, you know, what do you think about the Bruce Arena hire? Was it something you saw coming? I know there was a lot of rumblings about it that, even before Klinsmann got let go, that U.S. Soccer had been talking to him for a year to a year and a half already about the position.
Go ahead. I think it's the safe option. I think it's a secure option. This is another media point that I'm going to pick apart a bit, is nobody expected, so Sino Galati said, no one expected us to lose to Mexico and Costa Rica. We never won in Costa Rica. Mexico has always been a challenge. The fact that, you know, we lost in, you know, but the 86th minute or 88th minute when, you know, I called out on Twitter, Josie Altidore with his hands on his hips during a corner kick, he gets shifted. A 37-year-old scores, and then, you know, there's the game. And then, you know, Costa Rica, just the players didn't, again, hold them accountable. They didn't play for them. You know, and there's many elements. But the fact that I think the Arena hire, it didn't surprise me. I think it's, I guess, probably the best we could do in the short term. He knows how to qualify. He knows the qualification cycle. He's He's done it twice before. He's going to bring back players that didn't get selected under Jurgen. He's probably going to bench players that Jurgen loved. He's got a great opportunity. The timing is pretty interesting. Two games have lost. It's pretty much impossible not to qualify, because even if we don't win in the Hex, we still go to like some other playoff that we should definitely win. So I think we're going to qualify. But he knows the process. He knows the rigors. He knows the type of player he's going to want. He's got a January camp, which is pretty notorious for bringing a lot of players in, working really hard, and kind of answering some of those questions. Am I a fan of Bruce Arena, the coach? Not really. That's not because he's bad. I would like a more progressive, more modern style coach. And I know he's had great success in MLS, great success with our national team. So he's not a bad coach. Great success at University of Virginia years and years ago. I don't know that he's the long-term answer, but for right now, I think it's what they need to do.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, for me, when I first saw it, my thought was this is going to be he's a placeholder. They brought somebody in who knows CONCACAF, knows our system, knows what you need to do to qualify. He's somebody that will get us into the World Cup, probably get us out of our group, and that's about it. I don't think that at this point in time in the cycle, you want to be bringing in somebody who's going to want to completely start changing things. You know, Arena's going to he's going to come in, he'll call in some different players. You know, the January camp is going to be mostly MLS because it's generally what the January camp is. Mm-hmm. So the interesting thing, it's going to be interesting to see what his team selection is and how it differs from Klinsmann. I'm not really sure that it can differ that much just because of the state our player pool is in, which I know we've already touched on.
Sure.
So,
well, the good thing about Arena too is he's going to only focus on the national team, the senior team, which is exactly what he should do. He's not going to be hired to completely revamp our system, that I know. He's not going to have to, you know, reinvent the wheel. He's not going to have to do all the things that Klinsmann promised or tried or implemented. I think he's just qualify, you know, select the players, compete, qualify, you know, keep that machine going. And I think he'll do that. I have no doubt that Bruce Arena, for all the pragmatism that maybe surrounds him as a figure, maybe not as a coach, I think he's just going to do just fine.
Yeah, there's certainly – I'm not concerned that we're not going to qualify. So,
right.
It's like you said, it's not going to be anything groundbreaking. It's not going to be anything crazy. My concern is that he has a decent World Cup and U.S. soccer decides to keep him around for another 4 years. You know, I'd like to see after the 2018 World Cup, I'd like to see him clean house. You know, get rid of Galati, get rid of Arena. Is it going to happen? No, I really don't think it will. But for me, I would like to see that. That's the time when that younger generation of players, the players that are 18, you know, 17, 18 right now, are going to be coming into a point where they should be making an impact on our national team. So you're going to have a new crop of players. To me, that seems like a good time to kind of wipe the slate clean and reboot and start moving forward.
Yeah, you're going to need to revitalize the system, the board, the business side of things. I mean, I think we can expect more, and this is a big thing I really put my values on. We should expect more from our soccer federation. We should expect more from our domestic leagues. We should expect more from our media. We should raise our standard, and I think that only happens with new ideas, progressive ideas. I hope that U.S. soccer is not snake bitten on hiring a foreign coach. I see people floating names like Bielsa and Mourinho and Guardiola. I'm like, you realize that those guys are way more blunt than Klinsmann and won't tolerate any of like, you will never get interviews if you know. And I think some of the things that people expect, you know, with our program and our system is a bit too far fetched. And I agree with you. Bring in new blood. Bring in, you know, more progressive minds. I think the game has changed. I think, you know, if we try to play the same style we did in 2002 and 2006 under Arena, we'll probably be played off the park. So he's going to have to, you know, hopefully he's going to evolve that style of his coaching. And I think he will. I mean, he's had a lot of success in Major League Soccer with, you know, with LA. And I think you know, he's going to do fine, but I agree with you. I mean, I think he's getting up there in age too. Maybe, you know, this is going to be too exhausting for him and he's going to want to take an administrative role at some point. Maybe he is the guy to replace, you know, Galati. I don't know. I mean, I've heard that rumor as well, so we'll see.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be interesting. So I don't know if you have any other thoughts on kind of the whole Klinsmann firing, Arena hiring. I know we touched on most of it, but there's anything else kind of that you wanted to touch on that we didn't quite get to there?
You know, I just think that it's important for people to remember, and this isn't me defending Klinsmann, but it's important for people to remember that a lot of the conversations and discussions and debates that he sparked need to continue. A lot of the questioning of player development mentality standard, a lot of the, you know, facilitating some controversial discussions about, you know, are players challenging themselves enough on all levels, not just the professional level. I mean, are youth players pushing themselves to maybe play another level, play a little more to expect more of themselves? Are the coaches getting the education? I think a lot of those things we can credit to his tenure, not just to him. I think I'd love to know who's going to be in this technical director role now. I'd love to know what that even means. I'd love to know going forward. You know, I would not want to look at the Klinsmann era as a failure, because it certainly is not. And, you know, again, I think people are going to be split if you're an MLS, you know, fan, apologist, you know, just you can kind of casual to the sport. You know, Klinsmann might have been the boogeyman. If you are more of a, you watch the European side of the game, you watch the South American style, you want more of a global system, Klinsmann probably was someone that you rallied against or rallied for. And, you know, he rallied against the system, you know, that was in place, status quo. So I think there's a pretty, much like our political system and our, I think there's a divide. And I think if we can just, you know, some middle ground and make sessions on both sides and move forward, I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah, and for me, really, I think Klinsmann coming in, the expectations were set way too high. And 5-10 years from now, we're going to look back on it and we're going to see that really his tenure was a success. Maybe that's a little bit of wishful thinking. Maybe 5-10 years from now, we're in the exact same place that we were. But for me, you know, I think you touched on it about pushing, getting the players to push out of their comfort zone. That's something that is imperative, is in my opinion, for us to take this to a new level. You know, there's a kid for Liverpool, for example, 17-year-old kid just scored a goal on the weekend or Monday or whatever, sometime in the last couple of days. You know, that's something that we don't have that with our 17-year-olds. They're still either they're playing.
They're going to prom.
Yeah, right. Our 17-year-olds are still playing high school or, you know, some youth club soccer. And that's something that hopefully starts to change. And if we do start seeing that, that's something that I certainly could see giving credit to the Klinsmann era and everybody involved in that. So for me, that's, I'm hoping that trend continues. I'm hoping that the discussion that was started about pushing the envelope and developing this, you know, the skill development, which is really where the U.S. program is lacking.
Yeah, 100%. I think, I think the real answers are going to be, you know, that post, you know, 2018 thing. But again, I think Jurgen Klinsmann did ask a serious question, which is, you know, how can we as a country compete if our league is what it is and our system is what it is? I mean, it's, you mentioned something great, you know, 17-year-old, I think it was yesterday, scored for Liverpool. And, you know, I'm not advocating every 17-year-old is a pro, but I think at the base level, at the root of it, you know, we have to start demanding, you know, more of our play. We have the talent. I think it's just, we need to channel it. And I think we need to put some of the things in place to make sure that we can do what you mentioned, because those are important elements. Those, you know, I've always said, if you want better national team players, you need to have better grassroots players. You need to have better grassroots coaching. You need to have a better system. So, I mean, that's a big deal with me.
Yeah, I mean, even just going back to my playing career as not, you know, as nothing really to write home about, but there comes a point in time where you're 15 years old playing for your, you know, playing for your high school team and your club team, and you may have to make a decision. Hey, what do I want to do with this? You know, there's a lot of players at that age that have the talent to really go far. But if they're in an environment where they're still, you know, they're the best player in their town, they're the best player on their club or in their high school or on their high school team, they're not challenged to push to new levels. You know, I've done some youth coaching in a small town south of Buffalo, far enough away where, you know, we don't have – it's a completely different player pool. And it's the same player pool that I came from. And at my age, I was one of the top three or four players that came out of that area. But when you start playing and you start pushing yourself and you start playing clubs from Toronto, New York City, you know, Ohio, Florida, from all over the place, the top players from around the country, you really realize, like, holy cow, man, on the grand scheme of things, there's so much more that would need to be done to push it to that new level. So it's a little bit of that exposure to that level. And then also you need to be given the opportunity and the avenues to, if you do decide you want to make that commitment, to have the support and, you know, not have to move overseas to get that kind of development. We need to develop that coaching and that sort of a system here where our players can feel comfortable and stay at home and develop at home. And in turn, that's going to make MLS a better league. You know, you said you need better grassroots players. And ultimately, we need to provide those competitive opportunities for kids of that age that right now they don't really get here, that you have to go overseas to get. Mm-hmm. So,
yep, 100%. It's all about perspective, and it's all about understanding, you know, where you are in your relative talent pool versus what you would be if you were in England or, you know, Germany or whatever. So, yeah, I think a lot of this leads us to, you know, the open system discussion, promotion, relegation, all that stuff. I mean, I think it really it's the taboo element of American soccer discussion, but it really shouldn't be. And I think the conversations get hijacked so often by people on both sides that are pretty polarizing. But I think the reality is, we need a sporting meritocracy. We need a system where we can reward development. We can have clubs, you know, invest into themselves and say, hey, you know, I produce really good players. I'm going to sell one, get a solidarity payment. That pays for another coach. That pays for a coach to take a licensing thing. This pays for a scholarship for two more players. We start doing that. You know, we have two national training centers. We should have 50 in this country. We should have, you know, state teams. ODP should come back and be right under that development academy level. We should have a second tier of academies that the college season should be 10 months long, just like the academy season is. I mean, we should be using our infrastructure, our size, our athletic country, our diversity. These should all be helps, not hindrances. And I think we have so many people that are trying to, you know, I think monopolize the sport is probably the right way to say it. We have one league dictating what the federation does, but dictates what the whole country does, you know, and it's just not right. And I know you see it too. And I think it's, you know, I think promotion, relegation, open systems. I know people are like, well, as soon as you say that, conversation's over. I'm like, well, it doesn't need to be. I think MLS is always going to do what it's going to do. It's a business. It's a, you know, it's a corporation in so many ways. But I think that there's a case to be made for an alternative. Maybe it's another pyramid. Maybe it's another federation. I don't know. But below that level, we can do so much. And I think we are limiting ourselves, you know, willfully by kind of allowing this system to just funnel, you know, through one league. I think, you know, if you look at the youth leagues in this country, there's a lot of talent. There's a lot of good coaches. There's a lot of good infrastructure. There's better facilities here than anywhere in the world. And yet we produce a mediocrity. And so I don't know all the answers, but I do think that a lot of the questions that you're posing, that I pose every day, I'm sure my wife's sick of me talking about it. I think a lot of it comes through having an open system where you can facilitate these meritocracy and some of these business elements, and it invites investment. And I know, you know, you're competing with the MLS model. It's the American sports model. I get it, you know, and I'm not going to rally against what is and what is not, but I think we live in a big enough country. We have enough players where we could have two systems. And, you know, it's not maybe the best system win. It's combine the best of both and create a great national team, create a be a soccer powerhouse.
Yeah, and I'm with you 100% there. And for me, the biggest thing is that this discussion about it is really starting to gain traction. And maybe that's just because those are the people that I follow on Twitter, and that's why I see it more and more, because I follow more of those people. But I certainly get the impression that the discussion is at least moving forward, and that can only be seen as a good thing. You know, I don't necessarily – I don't know the answers either. I don't know that it really needs to be another professional – necessarily a professional league, but you talked about the different tiers with the youth – with youth players and with the ODP. And, you know, for me, even that – that would be smart for MLS to, even if you're not going to get rid of MLS, which, to be quite honest with you, I don't think you're going to do that just because of the expansion fees. You know, they're asking $200 million for a new club to come into the league. That's never going to change. There's so much money that has already been invested by the owners of those clubs that you're never going to get MLS tied into a promotion relegation type of system. But if you can work this tiered situation, you know, the open system that so many people are talking about now, if you can link that somehow with MLS, so even if it is still all funneled through MLS, it's structured in a way that will aid in the development. It's going to be, you know, it's going to give MLS a vested interest in the youth development.
Right. And I think the reality is, you know, MLS is never going to change its business structure, as you rightly note. I think the real thing is we need other tiered leagues. We need if it's NASL that collapses and another one takes its place. The problem is we're treating soccer like we treat baseball and football and basketball, which all depend on the minor leagues and, college to get the players. And I think the reality is that works when one region dominates a sport. Unfortunately, soccer is a global sport, and it's a sport that, the standard is continually getting more and more, enhanced. And I think we have to start to implement certain elements of player development, coaching development, system development to make the top tier league the best it can be, or hold it accountable. I mean, I would love to see Chicago Fire relegated. They need to be for their own good. I mean, I think any team that makes the playoffs with a losing record, it's kind of a joke. And to another point that I think we're going to get to is the American fan isn't stupid anymore. They can turn on the Premier League or Serie A or La Liga or Bundesliga or, you know, Eredivisie, and then they can see this great story of, you know, Leicester City, or they could see, you know, some of this fantastic football that's being played over there. And so they're turning off MLS. They're not watching it because the product isn't good enough. And it shouldn't be that way. It should not be that way. And again, it gets back to, you know, perception, right? Like, is this working? Is this, you know, yes, the sport is growing, but more and more players. I don't see kids that want to play for the Red Bulls. I see kids that want to play for Liverpool. I don't see kids that want to play for, you know, the Colorado Rapids. You know, they want to play for Arsenal. They want to play for, you know, Juventus. And so I think that we have a long way to go, but I think one of the elements that has to come into place is to some degree there has to be genuine industries around promotion relegation or open system or rewarding development, having solidarity payments. I mean, there's no reason why MLS should be able to not pay some of these things for players, or a team should be able to not get rewarded for developing a youth player. I think that's just – talk about shooting yourself in the foot as a country, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing. Everything that MLS does is to benefit itself. It's not geared towards benefiting soccer as a whole in this country, and that's, to me, what really needs to change. And you're starting to see the, you know, they're making investment in their academies, the MLS clubs. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a start, but it makes, you know, I wonder, because we haven't really seen many players come through these academies. It kind of, you know, and it's still kind of early, but it makes me wonder, is this more just, you know, for public, you know, public relations saying, oh yeah, we're investing this money, we have an academy, but really we're not putting that much effort into it. I don't know. For me, you know, you look around the world and what age are players making their first team debuts? You know, like we just saw a 17-year-old from Liverpool. We're seeing, you know, players, Alex Iwobi for Arsenal break in at 19. That you see players around the world break into their first team top level clubs at 19, 20, 21 mm-hmm. years old. They're not getting to MLS until they're 22, 23. We were talking about Darlington Nagby as being a young player when he was 25.
Right. No, yeah, perception again, right? What is young compared to the global standard? I think the other reality is all of our academy players, where do they go when they're done with academy? College. They don't go to the first team. And so, I mean, you're hitting the right points. I mean, these are the right points. And I think, you know, the promotion relegation argument, it should never be an argument. It should just be a discussion. But I think the reality is you have people who are afraid that it would collapse soccer in this country. And you have people that are open-minded and say, you know what, if it's like a true capitalist model, another one will pop up in its place. I mean, that's business. If I have a small business and it sucks, well, I probably won't stay in business very long. I won't be rewarded for being bad. I'll be bailed out. And I think, you know, we have to be careful. We can't just, again, copy and paste what they do in England and throw it over here. We have to implement it. I think there's a plan out there. People are talking about give MLS teams 5 to 7 years to get their act together, get their academy together, stock it with a good pipeline of players, and then create that second tier. Maybe it's some MLS teams that are second rate, you know, maybe in smaller markets that come into play. Maybe it's maybe USL becomes that second tier. Maybe NASL gets its act together. And then after the 7 year grace period, anyone who invests, you know, you roll the dice. And anyone who is a current investor in the league, an owner, you got, you know, you had 7 years, almost a decade to get, you know, to prepare for this. And like any business, you have a contingency plan. I think, you know, again, I'm broad brushing and generalizing, but I think there are possibilities here.
Yeah, there certainly is. And that's, you know, you touched on it earlier about how we have the infrastructure and number of players and talent that we have here really is second to none. So it's just a matter of getting everything organized the right way, getting the right people in charge of organizing that system. And, you know, for me, hopefully it's sooner rather than later. I'm kind of tired of seeing all of the arguments and bickering. And it's almost like people don't want to really sit down and have the conversation, which for me is really cool that you're starting to see, like I said before, you're starting to see this movement gain a little bit more traction, which eventually is going to get to a point where the people in power have to sit down and have a legitimate conversation about this and address the issues and really lay out the groundwork for the future of this country. I mean, we're at a point in time right now where we can really make or break the future of U.S. soccer. And I think it's, you know, if we don't, we're just going to struggle along the same way we have been. You know, we can continue to be a mid-20s ranked side in the world. If that's what U.S. soccer wants to do, then, you know, don't change anything. But if U.S. soccer wants to become a power like they claim to want to do, they're going to have to change something eventually. So,
right, yeah,
for me, it's hopefully sooner than later.
Exactly. No, you're right. And I think, you know, this conversation leads into another one, which I'm sure we'll have, you know, we're cutting close on time here, but we'll have it on another podcast is, you know, what does an open system really mean? Like, because to me, the preview to that would be an open system is actually harder on American soccer and coaches than ever before because it's a free market. And who's to say that the American player would even be valued in an open market? You know, so like that's a whole other thing. It's like, well, if you can get a better player from Mexico or Central America or Africa, you know, I mean, you see it in England, you see it, you know, all the time in these other countries where, you know, the domestic players are marginalized. So again, there are pitfalls to an open system. I think the pros outweigh the cons, but again, it's a discussion that I'm sure you're sick of seeing the same, you know, shots being taken back and forth. But I think the reality is discussion's healthy, debate's healthy, and we need to move that needle a little bit. And I think every day we have, you know, someone like Taylor Twellman who say, yeah, you know what, I can see that working, not now, but maybe in 10 years. Fine, that moves the needle a little bit. I think every time we can, you know, have someone in the media, a former player, advocate for you know, a solution that moves the needle a little bit. We didn't have this, you know, 5 years ago. So, you know, I think overall, though, we've really seen a gigantic shift under the Klinsmann era. And now we'll see what the Bruce Arena era, you know, part two has in store for us.
Absolutely, man. Hey, I really want to thank you for taking the time out and joining me tonight, man. It's been a pleasure. I'm glad we finally got to do this, and hopefully we can do this again in the future.
Oh yeah, anytime. It's a pleasure being on. You know, big fan of what you're trying to do and what you're doing with this podcast. I think we need more of these. You know, and let me know how I can help in any way.
Absolutely, man. Hey, give yourself a quick plug where people can find you, where people can find your writing.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So I'm on Twitter, John, J-O-N underscore Townsend, T-O-W-N-S-E-N-D 3. Pretty active there. Very active there, actually. I have a little blog that I just kind of house some writing on, some weekly thoughts, farpostfooty.com. The big work is on The Football Times. It's a massive website now. We've got our own podcast. We've got, you know, tons of great writers, great content. You know, if you're a fan of the sport in any continent, any country, we've got something for you. We've got a magazine coming out, and so check it out. But yeah, I mean, I'm around. I'm responsive to tweets and all that good stuff. So I appreciate you having me on. It's been fun.
Yeah, man, absolutely. And as always, you can find me at GunnersFan6. You can find the podcast at EuroSnobPod, and check out our blog site. We've also Wixsite.com/EuroSnobPod, something like that. There's a link on the Twitter. I knew I'd screw the link up somewhere in there. We usually, after all the EPL and Champions League games, Steven and Alex have been putting player reviews up every once in a while when I'm feeling like being, when I'm in a ranty kind of mood, I'll go and throw a quick blog post up there. So go check it out. And, you know, let us know what you guys want to hear, because we're more than welcome to any suggestions. So we're just trying to be a part of furthering the discussion and hopefully make a little bit of a difference. So John, again, I want to say thanks, and we'll talk to you guys soon.
All right. Take care.